to DMnastics, the gym for dungeon masters to work out their minds. I'm one of your hosts, DM Celeste, a.k.a. Sea Witch.
And I'm your other host, DM Neil, a.k.a. Jote Moniak. I almost forgot it. I got real close. My brain said, maybe not today.
It's summertime, baby. We all just want to go touch grass. Forget our names. Live in the woods.
Yep. So what do we have today?
Ooh, so today we've got an article. So it looks like we've got an article from CBR.com called 15 Tricks to Planning a D&D Session, if you're a DM, written by Jacob Bork. So this is exciting. This is like exactly what we do here, talking about planning tips, tricks, helping out, you know, game masters everywhere. So I'm excited to dig in, see what they got to say.
Not only that, it was also updated by Isaac Williams to add even more. So I will say a couple things that are not like as overly positive as we have always been. One, who else is this for if you are not a DM? I just find that a very interesting thing to add to the title of this article.
You know, maybe there are some tables that perhaps have more player character involvement in planning.
I like it. Also,
or this could be for planning a D&D session, literally scheduling it and, you know, having it hosting it at your house, right? You don't have to be a DM to host, right?
Yeah, see, now they're like, oh no, this article is not for me. I am not the DM.
Yeah.
But the other thing I would say is that also it is framed as tricks, but what I will say is that there is a lot of very valuable information here, but by the time we are done, this is not easy. This is not simple. This is not like shortcuts by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
Because there are 15 tricks, and some of them are very large.
Yes.
But let's start with number 15 and work our way through quickly as we can. Use simple but effective NPCs.
Yeah, that's true. NPCs are the bread and butter of D&D. They say provide support. So saving time, yeah, create effective NPCs. Lean into archetypes and traits. I mean, yeah, this is, I think, great. I think people, especially new GMs, tend to get a little overwhelmed, especially if they come from seeing like shows like Critical Role or other like, you know, full scale productions where every NPC has an awesome voice and backstory and they all relate to some. You don't have to do that. You can just, there's a reason this game is so fantasy, and like fantasy archetypes exist because they're relatable and they're familiar. So it's totally okay to start with like, all right, yeah, you have your friendly tavern keeper, you know, you have your mysterious ranger type who like comes to help the party. Like that is totally fine, especially when you're just starting out.
Well, I also think like for me, like one distinguishing feature, and I'm not particularly great at consistently maintaining an NPC voice. I'm pretty good at establishing an NPC voice and then moving away to they say kind of things. I just, yeah, it's just me. I can't keep it. But like I said, if I have like a line or a catchphrase that really establishes that voice in people's head, and then move on, because I'm terrible at maintaining those things.
Yeah, don't, the voices thing, this is also good for player characters too. Like, don't feel compelled to do a voice. I never do voices for my characters because I don't want that to get in the way of me being able to roleplay my characters, right? I don't want to be like spending time tripping over the voice. So this is good advice, you know, keep it simple. All right, what's next? 14, keep a list of appropriate random encounters. Sure, that's pretty good.
So like the idea of appropriate is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
I think, and so this is where this starts to be, to divulge from like, you know, those trick simple, shortcut kind of things. But I think this is really important to have your resources available. A lot of examples are, I think the best example, that's probably it, is if you look at a lot of the products that like Beetle and Grimm put out, and then you have a Dungeon Master screen that is tailored only to the adventure that it has come with. So like I ran front to back their version of Ghosts of Saltmarsh.
Yeah.
So inside of the dungeon screen is random seafaring like boat names and encounters. And it's like, these are things that I will use. So it's not like, oh, what would you find in a dungeon? See, there's a character voice that I could keep probably for way longer
Kermit,
than I should.
Yeah.
But Hi-ho there. But the idea that I could keep, why would I have dungeon encounters in front of me when they're on a boat?
Right.
And so I think that having,
that's what they mean by, if you have a bit,
yeah. So if you have the basic idea of where your party is, there's nothing stopping you from putting that into your Google search and saying, I want seafaring adventures. Ta-da. But having Ta-da. Those ready so that you're not doing that at the table. Yeah. You're not saying, okay, ready encounter. Uh-oh. Oh, no, those aren't the ones. Yeah.
What do you mean you want to go walk around in the woods? Okay. You know, that sort of. And don't forget that there are always more tools than you think available. Like, if you have the Dungeon Master Guide, there are actually random encounters by wilderness types, you know, in there. And a lot of people just don't know that. And they're sorted, of course, by general, like, CRs and stuff, too. So just do the work to have a list like that in front of you. Don't spend a lot of time making these lists. I'm 100% sure you could get something really great on DM's Guild or, like, Drive-Thru RPG, random encounter kind of lists. But if you have a specific kind of campaign or, like, you know, you're in this one kind of environment, this is a great thing to make sure you have for that section of your game.
It's true. And it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some of the more memorable things that I've ever had with most of my groups are random encounters, because then I don't have a lot of emotional attachment when I go into those. I'm just, it's a random encounter. Let's have fun. So I think it was like a longboat full of barbarians, and the leader had a wand of wonder. And so then, like, just fired it off every single round.
What are we doing? What are we doing? Yeah.
Yeah. And just laughing the entire time, having the time of their life. And then the catch there, though, is don't forget what happens if you give your players a magic item.
Yes.
Neil learned a valuable lesson that day of I shouldn't have done that. Or I should have used every charge before they got it.
Yeah.
So number 13, though, remember that planning can be casual. And unlike Celeste and I, many think that DM's plan is hunching over a desk full of books.
Writing lots of notes. Yes.
I literally have multiple documents for my campaigns of literally, like, right now, or like almost like immediate versus archival. It doesn't need to be that way, though.
Yeah. Yeah. You can be a panic DM like me. Usually a couple hours before a game, I'm like, beans. And then I'm like, where did I put that piece of paper that I wrote the notes on for 2 weeks ago session? It's okay. I wouldn't recommend being as bad as I am about it. Like, if you can have one notebook that you can write in and just chaos that, that's fine. But yeah, it really doesn't take a lot to make the people around you happy and have a good game. So you shouldn't kill yourself to do it. Especially, I feel like these DMs who are like, I spent 6 hours writing notes for this one city of the whatever. And I'm like, all right, well, are you sure your players are going to spend that much time in that city? That seems like a lot to do. Like, if you enjoy it, you know, that's fine. If it doesn't impede your game, like, if you don't walk away upset when players don't engage in every aspect of the things you've written, then it's fine to be that kind of overplanning, you know, GM. But it's okay to not, and you shouldn't when you're starting out. Keep it simple is absolutely the right way to go.
Yeah, and there's a lot to be said about the way that trying to do, like, I don't mean it to be this way because of the way we talk about this podcast, but, like, the mental exercise of just processing some of the things. And I would say that, like, if you are really going to spend that investment, and you already pointed to the fact, but, like, figuring out what are the touch points of that 6 hour investment that the players get to interact with. Because some of the things that I've started, because I got away from it. I mean, we all have our faults, and I know I definitely was like, and started to think about too many things that weren't what I already have clues to what the players would already want. So then I kind of just steered myself back towards what the players would actually want. And so I have one character who is playing the Beastheart from MCDM, and they came from kind of the Frozen North. And so I had already had a kind of, like, barbarians that lived up north. They have a connection with the white like the white tigers that live up there. So he has one of those. And so I don't know that I've really thought about enough about that region, but now that I know that inevitably they're probably going to end up there at some point, because this is this character's background.
Yeah.
Why not spend that time investing into that? And the other fun thing about that is when I really have questions that I don't maybe know the answers to, and I don't feel like it would reveal too much to the character, I'm just going to text that player and say, hey, I was wondering, do you have any thoughts about X, Y, and Z? And then send that text out.
Yeah. This is like, go for it.
No, go ahead. I don't know that I should say this next part out loud because it's the idea that it's what one other character is doing that I don't think the other players know about. So I'm really not going to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what you touch on here, remember that planning can be casual. I think even more important than just session to session is like the world building stuff. Because to your point, Neil, like you don't know where the players are going to go, what they're going to be interested in. So do not define this entire world before you sit down to play. You need the players to feel invested and to help you define that world. So you actually punish them when you make every single detail of this world and define it for them, right? Because they don't get any ownership over it. You know, they don't get a say in what their home looks like in the frozen north if you've already spent 20 hours describing every detail of the frozen north before you even sat down to play, right?
Yeah. I mean that even harkens back to like some of the earliest days, like some of the, you know, and this is anecdotal and who's to say how true it is or is not, but one of the things that I have heard is that one of the reasons that there was a move towards the Forgotten Realms is because how well defined Greyhawk was. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that like there wasn't these open spaces and places to kind of develop things, you know, short of just being like, oh, there's a whole nother continent you didn't know about. Not going that far kind of thing. But what is number 12?
Number 12, know what the overall objective is. Okay.
Yeah.
Just for the whole session, right? Or the story? I mean, both are good. You should know.
I think this is trying to allude to the fact that, like, you know, air quote railroading is, and I have defined it this way before. And again, it is me being too much of a dad and playing too much in the span of it. Well, a single analogy. But one of the problems is not inherently railroading. It's that you're telling nobody can get out of their seat on the train and nobody can get out of their car. Because being on a train is really nice. Some people really enjoy it. Yeah. Some people think it's the best way to travel. But one of the things is like, if you're telling this person that they can't do anything but sit in their seat, well, the train stopped being fun at that point.
Yeah.
The other concept is just like, hey, you're in a world. What you doing?
Yeah.
Huh?
That freaks me out. I'm like, that's life. Yeah. I have to decide every day what I want to do with my life. I don't want to do that in my fantasy games. Like, I want to have a good idea.
Yeah.
My fantasy characters shouldn't have to worry about what they're going to eat for dinner, man. I got to decide what I want to eat every day until I die. Like, that's hideous. That's hideous. Yeah. I don't want to do that in my games.
Yeah. So that's what this is alluding to, like to have like those bigger overarching goals. And is it individual? Because even to say like the West March style functions because the players are bringing you goals. Like that's one of the things about that is that they're coming to the table saying, we as this group would like to do this thing. We would like to go to this
dungeon. We want to discover this location. We want to find this thing. You know, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's really the clear objectives.
Okay, that's good advice. When you frame it like that, I get what they're saying, and I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Oh, it's 11. I love Road 11.
Understand what are the players and their characters looking for.
Yeah.
That goes to 12. I mean, I feel like those work pretty well in tandem. That as long as, because if you have an overarching story, which I do, but also at the same time, there are things that I know the individual players are looking for. I will state one that is more openly known. So one player wants to is a pirate and they want to get their own boat. So like I can always work towards that.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, that's not the overarching campaign that I have in my head.
But it's something that should absolutely happen during the course of the campaign.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Yeah. And this, I mean, goes back right into our conversation about defining the world and stuff. Like, make sure you're always factoring your players into everything you're doing. Because otherwise, what's the point?
I think it's also really important to also say, like, I don't feel like me deciding the whole campaign, it should switch to them getting a boat. I don't think the other players are going to think that that's interesting.
No, I don't even think that player who wants the boat wants the whole story to be about them getting a boat. They just want to get a boat and save the world or whatever. You know, that's we're people. We're complicated. Players, characters are complicated, too. They want multiple things at once.
Woof. Yeah, no, it's broke my brain. Don't do it. I was even thinking of like how terrible it would be to change the whole campaign where like that's
just,
the end
just
of
just getting
it,
the boat. Yeah. Yikes. It's like a shopping campaign. Yeah, let's move on. Okay. Have a list of generic NPC names. This is great advice. This is amazing advice. I always do this on my notes. I always have something or like a random name generator up because gosh, there is nothing worse than just you're like, ooh, NPC, da-da-da, they say this. And then your character's like, what's your name, friend? And you're like, no, in that panic. Oh, it's the worst.
Yeah. So I managed to stumble onto a tool or a piece of software that I've used for now a very long time. It's not around anymore, which is makes the whole thing very interesting. Because like then it gets into the weird nuance of like what's okay and what's not okay about obtaining the software. Because it's no longer available in any space or place. But it's called the Ever-Changing Book of Names, where basically someone wrote a software program that analyzes the individual pieces of information that come in to reproduce similar structured names. So basically, I mean, let's do it. I have it right here. So, but the idea of having those ready is...
Wait, we should save this for the light bulb.
Ooh, we should. Okay. So then we should. So in the light bulb, I'm going to talk about
something. We'll talk about it more in a bit.
Yep. But I do agree. Like, I don't think that there is something more mentally crippling for me than trying to come up with an on-the-spot name with nothing else.
With nothing else, yeah.
I'm going to have to go online. There's no... Because that's what I did for a NPC. It was a turtle who was a rogue. And I went online and eventually came up with the name of Shell Shadow.
Yeah. Yeah. And like other ways, because you'll panic and you'll say something weird and then your players will torment you forever. And then that's just what that is. So,
you'll say pirate themed instead of pirate owned.
Yes. Yes. God. Yeah. That's a great piece of advice. 10 out of 10. This next one is interesting, number 9.
Yeah. Think logically about geography.
I don't really feel like this matters at all in a fantasy game. I mean, yeah, so the quote here is, nothing can dash players' immersion and throw the DM off their game like a confusing element. It doesn't make sense for PCs to come across a forested hut in a desert. I think that's a very interesting thing you could do in a fantasy game, and I think it wouldn't make sense, but it wouldn't make sense in a way that's interesting to the story. So I don't know. I think this one is crap. I think we can throw this one out.
The last sentence literally is, however, something that doesn't appear to make sense could be an adventure in and of itself.
This was a throwaway one. Number 9 is boo.
my thought would be the way to reframe the concept would be don't do it without knowing why you did
it. Why you're doing it.
Because
just
in the sense that if I do it, I'm going to get asked about it. Like if I, like let's say I have this barren desert that they're wandering through and then bam, there's a forested hut. There's going to be follow-up questions. I can't act as if it's okay. I can't act as if it's normal because I'm going to have too many people asking me too many questions about why there's a forested hut inside a desert.
Yeah, if you have a druid, that's it. That's game over, man. They need to know. Like, they're going to go into that hut and ask whoever lives there how you do that, trees. You know? That's just... Okay, whatever. Number 8. Think about what the NPCs want. This is great.
Love this one.
This is like my number one piece of advice when people are like, I don't know how to roleplay or, you know,
it almost makes me forget about number nine.
Right. Yeah. Just pick your, know your motivation. That's like, so I went to theater school and that's like the number one piece of advice when you're acting out anything. Just know your character's motivation. Because if you know, and it doesn't have to be hard, you're like, okay, here's this NPC, they're the innkeeper. If you know that the NPC, that innkeeper's whole motivation is, I want to earn enough money to retire. Like, there you go. That's so, so simple. But that will guide literally every conversation you can have. You can always go back to that. And if you don't know what your NPC would do or think or say, just remember that. So maybe that means that they have a very negative response when the PCs try to burn down their establishment, or like, you know, maybe that's the whole thing. They're seen as greedy by other people. Like just having that one simple motivation will help you remember that NPC, will always give you a touch point to like play that NPC, and just gives you a note to play and rely on in all conversation.
Yeah, and it makes for better villains, because mm-hmm. is great the villain, yes. You know, if I think of the Lich, their main motivation is long game. I will leave. If I think there's any chance I'm going to die, I will leave. At the same time, how close are they to their long game? Is it that they cannot back out of it? Are they too close? So they're willing to fight to the death in those moments. The same thing could be true about if we're using that same tavern keeper. Is that a touch point that you could have a villain use to kind of interconnect to NPCs? Are they willing to do things they otherwise wouldn't? Because if they do this thing, they can retire.
Yep.
And so is it going to play off of those motivations in a positive or negative way? But even having just the one, That's it.
That's all you want. That's their whole motivation. You don't need to write anything else. Yeah.
Yeah, they had a really rough time in second grade because they were struggling with mathematical concepts. Like those, I mean, I guess unless that's the one thing. I don't know how you're doing that, but please.
In second grade, I messed up on a math test. I would redeem myself. There you go. That's a goal, I guess. You could really just say, I want to redeem myself. It doesn't matter why, but that will like drive the whole thing. Like, that's great. Great advice.
Number seven, give relevant rules a once-over. Yeah, I mean, it's not asking you to do too much. I think, you know, it's the difference between knowing every rule and knowing some rules. It's often the way I've often looked at some scenarios is there's a big difference between being aware of everything and being involved in everything. You know, at the end of the day, each person in that chair should know their character better than I do. Inevitably, that should be true. This is a weird one to say, and I know we've alluded to it before. I would like, as if I were to say, as a DM, like try and find certain synergies between characters and try and give those a once over so that you're not overly surprised by those things.
You know, one thing that I think it helps, it's like reminds me of that, is lately I've been making sure every once in a while just to check in on my character's sheets to know what spells they've chosen and like what they have. So, because I don't want to put a problem in front of them that could commonly be solved by a commonly used spell, only to realize that, oh, for some reason, you know, my bard didn't take this one spell that every other bard in the world takes, right? So those kind of assumptions, I feel like knowing what your spellcasters have in particular is really useful. I do also like this because they mentioned the two that I thought of immediately were underwater combat and like vehicle rules. I'm like, those things you will know ahead of time as a GM if you're planning something, and those are going to matter. So refreshing yourself on those rules is a great idea to make sure you do that ahead of time. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I did. Again, with the Salt Marsh campaign, I read the underwater rules so many times.
How do boats work? You know, that whole,
you're gonna fall in. I know of a dungeon you're gonna go into where more than half of it is underwater. I know, so on and so forth. Number six.
Six, take inspiration from pop culture. Heck yeah. Take a cool idea. If you watch an episode of something, you're like, wow, that would be a cool adventure. Make it. Or you're like, wow, that was a cool root level of this dungeon in World of Warcraft. Make it, you know, that, do it.
Yeah.
Save yourself, like, you don't have to be so creative and wonderful, because honestly, the players have no idea what this is inspired by or based off of. And you can choose to tell them or not. It doesn't matter. Like, as long as they have a good time and you have a good time doing it, it does not matter.
Yeah. Or if they do, it could be awesome. And they could love it all the more because of that things. I mean, I feel like this one also goes back a lot to NPCs as well. Like, what's the one thing about the character you just watched in a movie that really stuck out to you? Just put them in.
Make them an NPC.
Done.
All good.
Consider the obvious plot hooks of the situation.
So, yeah, it can be hard to plan a session's plot outright. Don't leave the players aimless, but hard-pressed to think about what circumstances should galvanize the players to action. Okay, I see what they're saying. They're, like, saying, think of the call to action for your adventures. Like, think about how you get the party involved. Just make sure you decide that before you start. I think that's actually very good advice.
Yeah, and I dealt with this a little bit recently where they, you know, the players were kind of going back and forth about what they think should happen next. It's a really fine line between no and yes, where there are certain things that they were saying where I'm just like, that's not going to happen. Like, that's just not going to work. Like, in the structure of everything that exists, as it has been placed on the table, those are not the things that would function. So even like leading some plot hooks along and not, you know, again, it's the difference between railroading, having them on the tracks and forcing them to stay in one seat. But the idea that, like, I could also tell that they were looking to me for some answers and giving clues in those moments about the plot hooks that you want or have placed, because they don't know, like, depending on that is not to then say that you're not a bad DM or GM or anything in between, because you're just one person that views the world in a certain way.
Yeah.
And now you have other people that inevitably view it differently because of their own life experiences. So the idea that you may need to help them find the hooks, it happens. It happens all the time.
That's totally fine. And remind them early and often, because also, like, you spend a lot more time thinking about this game than your players do, which sounds harsh, but it's not. Like, that's the nature of being the game master, right? You have to think about this, you know. Most players just get to show up and play. They don't think week to week about the game. They might think about how excited they are, or, you know, those things for their personal characters, but it's your job to keep the story fresh, to remind them of what's going on, and get them reconnected into the action each and every time. So don't feel bad about it. We all have to do it. We all have to remind our players, even the best note takers, you know, why things are important and why this is the way they are. And your players will be nothing but appreciative for you doing that.
Yeah. And I think this comes up even a little bit more because, anecdotally for me, I think it comes up a little bit more when you go into the exploration pillar. You know, I am at spot A and I want to be at spot B, and it's going to take travel and effort to get there. And then inevitably someone will inquire, I do not remember, why are we going to spot B in the first place?
Yeah. Wait, what?
And you say, I'm glad you asked. And then you tell them why maybe that spot B could be interesting for them to arrive at.
So I'll share a true trick I have for reminding this. I frequently have NPCs in my world ask the players what they're doing here and what they want. So the players have to explain over and over again, like, not do it every single time. Like, you know, don't be annoying about it. But every three or four sessions, if somebody's like, I'm sorry, why have you walked into town with a bunch of weapons? And who are you? Right.
Yeah.
That is always a good way to, you're reminding your players by having their player characters explain what the heck they're doing here.
Perfect.
Yeah. All right, number four. I love this one. Reuse old material. Yes.
Always. Yes.
And this is great. I love the first sentence. It's unlikely that all of a DM's planning gets used. Yes. Any extra planning you do, don't throw it away. Throw away nothing. Like, use it again. Or if you're running multiple campaigns with different players, use it again. If you make an awesome dungeon, use it in both games. You can just change the details, change the monsters if they're different levels. Like, don't waste time if you don't have to. Throw away nothing. Recycle. It's good for you, good for the planet. Just recycle.
Reduce, reuse, recycle. done.
Or if you, oh man, this, talking about dungeons, like from our last episode, I just thought about this, like, if you make a great dungeon, chances are your players are not going to go in every single room. Those rooms they don't go in, save them, put them in the next dungeon, just port those bad boys right over.
The only time I couldn't do that is when I was doing a mega dungeon, and basically, like, structurally, it was designed to fit on very specific size flip mats. So then, like, there's just an element of metagaming that you just can't get away from, because it's like, well, we did all of these things, and there's that one blank spot. I can't imagine why. But yeah, if you're doing a dungeon that you've homebrewed, it can twist and wind and up and down and do all sorts of things that, you know, inevitably the players may not interact with. And it, or is it an NPC for a shop that they didn't go into? Put the shop in the next town.
It just, move it over. They don't know. It's okay.
Are you ready? I am interested in this one, probably more than anything else. Time-constrained events are a DM's friend.
I guess so. I feel like time-constrained events are very helpful if you have a party that is... they're wanderers, like they're perpetually indecisive. I think this can be, having a time sensitive thing can be a great way to kind of snap them back into the action or get them back on track if they've, you know, ignored a plot for too long or something. This is one of those ways that, and I feel very strongly that it is a GM's job to keep the pace of a story moving. If your players start wandering or whatever, you have to introduce a thing. You have to start the encounter. Somebody crashes out into the bushes and attacks. You know, some kind of time pressure thing comes down. So this is just, I think, emphasizing that. Have this kind of scenario ready to go to amp the pressure and remind people that they're in an adventure and there are stakes if they don't pay attention to what has been happening so far.
I love that. Yeah, the idea that basically... because it goes back to the idea of, what are the NPC's motivations? Is it that, you know, the villain that they're trying to find has figured out this would be an opportune moment to try and off the player so they're no longer a thorn in my side?
Yep.
And then, you know, someone shows up and it's like, oh yeah, the thing. And the person came after.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah. We should probably go get that thing that stops the dragons from attacking. Oh, because the dragons just attack. You know, that sort of... or, you know, you have 90 days before this cult finishes the ritual to summon Great Cthulhu. Uh-oh, that means you better start spending those 90 days well, not shopping, Brenda. Like, you know, whatever it is. Yep. I'm sorry, Brenda. I'm sure your shopping really helped the party.
I love the next one.
Ooh, yeah, introduce it.
Tweaking can be as good as inventing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't.
Done.
Make new stuff. So much, unless you really want to. That's the only reason you ever need to completely homebrew make something from scratch. So much material exists for all fantasy games. There is 100% a monster out there that fits what you want, even if it's not in the monster manual. If it's not on DM's Guild, if it's not on DriveThruRPG, if you can't just find it in a Google search, if it's not on Reddit, like, if it's not from a third-party company like Cobalt Press, I can't believe it. I don't think you've looked hard enough.
Yeah, I mean, literally, I've completed my collection of collector's editions because Cobalt Press came out with the new Tome of Beast 1.
Yeah, a remixed. Yeah.
Honestly, I think I just, like, clicked the wrong box. It's the only thing I can rationalize is, like, why don't I have every other one. Did I just not pay attention the first time out?
It was, like, almost 8 years now.
Yeah. So now I have 1, 2, and 3 and the Creature Codex all in the collector's edition. If I can't find something that fits the bill, and then even if I do, it's going to fit, what, 75% of the bill?
Yeah.
I tweak the other 25.
There you go.
Is it that it's too strong and I make it a little weaker? Is it too weak and I make it a little stronger?
Yeah.
Either way. Or, like, I had a random encounter and I knew that, because the other thing to think about sometimes in this regard is which player's not getting the attention? Is it magic item wise? Is it story wise? I had a new player join, and basically they went through, they were going through a storm that was almost like an unnatural level of lightning in the storm. And so I said, hey, you know that you remember the basic elements of a ritual that you could do to imbue something with the power of lightning.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, so I know it really well. I said, oh, no, I didn't say that. I said, you had the basic idea. This is risky. You will be severely hurt, die, or fail, potentially, depending on how you go about it. And so my thing is, like, basically, if you want to take a piece of the ship you're on and make a wand, we're just going to do that as the end game. If you want to do something different and imbue something else, I will allow it, but I'm not going to tell you what it is because I'm going to need to do that after the game's done and figure out what that is. So they were like, oh, the rogue needs a better bow. I was like, all right, let's go.
Yeah.
So then they do it. He does it, flies off in a charred hunk off of the boat. And I was like, give me perception checks. They're like, why? I was like, so you can figure out which way his body went.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, give me a strength check to see whether or not you hold on to it. Oh, you don't. What are you guys going to do? And so they dive in. They find that they did manage to imbue the bow with lightning. But, like, you know, that was literally just tweaking a random encounter that had mentioned having lightning be able to create a wand of lightning and then just changing it into something they wanted.
Done. That's great.
Our number one.
Remember to relax and have fun. Yeah, that's great advice. You're here to play a game. And as much as people don't often think of the game master as a player, you are. You're playing a game and it needs to be fun. That's the point of games, to be enjoyed. So if you're not enjoying yourself, look at what you're doing and see how you can enhance your own enjoyment without, you know, intruding on the enjoyment of others. Like, that's what it is. That's what a successful game is. You all sit around and you have a great time. It's not to plan something complicated. That's not the goal. It's to have a great time.
Yeah. I think the best sentence out of this portion is, with the right rapport, a DM and the players can make anything fun.
Yep.
Done and done. And I agree wholeheartedly.
Wholeheartedly.
If it's not fun, find out how to get back to where it is fun or don't.
Or don't.
And that is okay.
Yeah.
Because there is a point at which I got to a point where I didn't think it was very fun. And I started taking some breaks and letting other players run one shots for a while.
Yeah.
As I just kind of took a step back because I was like, yeah. And then, you know, and you get in lulls. And like I said, for me, I think the lull recently was I was investing too much into the world in places where the players were not going.
So you felt like it just wasn't satisfying.
Yeah. Well, because you're also not getting any feedback from that, from that work when you would go to the table because... What do they care that this land that they're not from and not going to has more development?
All right. Well, we done it.
We done it. And if you care and you want to leave us, if you want a trick on how to help us, you can go over to Apple Podcasts. Here's a tip.
Leave us a rating and review.
If you're a DM or if you're not, we don't care. Go to your podcatcher of choice. Leave a rating and review. It is always helpful for us.
And of course, if you want to reach out directly, you can always email us at dmnastics@gmail.com. And make sure to follow us on Twitter at dmnastics, me personally at cconowich, and Neil at jotemoniac. And for everything else on the network, make sure to visit blockpartypodcastnetwork.com.
Let's head to the post-workout cool down and stretch with the light bulb.
Light bulb.
What do we got today, Neil?
Okay, so I alluded to it, and again, there is an interesting legality discussion that we get to have real quick, in the sense that the software itself is called the Ever-Changing Book of Names. The person that has produced it is no longer producing it. So it gets into an interesting space and place because, like, I can't even find their website anymore.
Oh, wow.
When I had originally found it, it was in active development. Basically, the product itself was given away for free. But if you wanted to unlock kind of its full potential, where you can add sets of names yourself as well as generating more names, you would need to pay. And I did pay. And so I personally have the unlocked version of the software. But basically what it does is this person was... both a software engineer and a linguist. And they basically were able to break down the parts of speech of names and then write an algorithm to then generate more names based on the input of the original set of names. So if you look towards the Forgotten Realms, we can do that right now because it's just in my Dropbox. Software. ever-changing book of names. I'll open it. So one of the big things was basically like one of the big things, the two unlocks when it's a paid version is it'll do 100 names at a time and you can add your own sets of names. So let's say
this is so great because if you wanted like to have a bunch of names that sound like Tolkien names, right? You could just plug in a ton of existing Tolkien elf names and then it would generate more for you, right?
So here's a prime example of the stretches that you can do. So I have selected Pokemon.
Yeah.
And the two options are Pokemon and Pokethulu.
What?
Which does exactly what you think it does.
So Pokemon mashed up with Cthulhu monsters? Oh my god. Uh-huh.
So Adgoth, Song Dweller. Oh, basically it's Beaston, but you've added an apostrophe between the B and the A. So Beaston, probably.
Cool.
Oh gosh, these are all over the place.
What a cool concept, though.
Shagong, Old Meru. Oh, yeah, like Meru totally sounds like a Pokemon, but yeah. Now I've added old. Or if I wanted to go to...
Well, Shagong, like Shagoth and Dugong is mm-hmm. like... That's cool.
But the idea that, yeah, this is there. I mean, I can... If we're being honest, I have found it online, basically freely available.
I found it online in a Google search.
Yeah. But again... So I will say that if a person is thinking about the moral compunctions behind something like this, I will say that with all the work that I have done previously, if something is no longer available in any format that you could pay for it, the reproduction of it kind of goes into a very light gray area. If someone were trying to charge someone for this, not cool. Not okay. Because I remember doing a lot of reproductions of materials for educational purposes. Mm-hmm. For things that were no longer in production. Was it that I was recreating, taking a VHS and upscaling it to a digital file? Because there's no way to buy that. Now, if I take a VHS and I make it into a DVD, but I could buy that DVD, that's not cool.
That's not good.
I should buy the DVD.
Yes.
Or buy it digitally because it is available digitally. But if those things are not true, there was legal parameters by which I could go and create those things. So that's all to say... There's also just, there was always a free version. The unlocked version was the only thing that you paid for. And it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's an amazing piece of software. Yeah. And I use it on a very regular basis. I mean, in terms of, let's say, okay, so Forgotten Realms, Dwarf Mail, that sounds like probably the thing I'll use more than anything else.
Yep. Every one of Neil's characters will now come from this list.
Yep. Guljal. Thormor, Hallamar, Tornwin, Orden.
These are great. Vanin,
yeah, Sorglin. Yeah, I mean.
Like Tormor. That's good.
So, I mean, yeah, ever-changing book of names. We're just throwing it out there as a wonderful piece of software. What you do with it, dear listener. There you go. But with that, we'll turn out the lights and head out of the gym.
Before we go, I want to implore you, the listener, to join the forums, the Discord, Twitter, and anywhere else you can find us and take part in these challenges, exercises, and other amazing conversations being had.
And to do that, head over to dungeonmasterblock.freeforums.net and try some DMnastics so your players don't ask, do you even lift?